It's June 14th, 2016, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from the Santa Cruz Mountains of Northern California, specifically from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional.
But the truth is always naked.
I am Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider, and we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition and what to make of it, sprinkled with some humor, good music, and a few surprises.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise to you, too.
Our show is sponsored by Go Raw. Raw food that's just great and great for you. And
Universe Spirit. Awakening us to the impact of climate destabilization and how we can make a difference.
Indeed, it is true. Climate is destabilizing as we speak. Boy, it's kind of precarious.
Oh, yeah. Temperatures are going up and down and up and down. I feel like I'm on a cyclone.
Michelle, the first thing she does when she gets up in the morning is, what's the temperature?
How else do I know what to wear if I don't know what the temperature is? And I'm in a clothing optional place. So if it's cold, I want to wear some clothes.
Over the years, when I've been asked who our audience is, sometimes my response is, our work is for people who take themselves too seriously. And for people who don't take themselves seriously enough. Which category do you fall into? So, tonight's featured phrase is seriously.
Seriously?
As a child, my teachers would describe me as a very serious boy. I remember Mrs. Schief, my third grade teacher, she looked at me and she said, "You're so serious." And maybe that's why I kind of leaned into the comedic orientation in life. You're surprised? Seriously? Indeed, there are serious issues that we must deal with, but ideally, we don't take ourselves too seriously in all of that. Let's look at the issue of why we needn't take so much of life so seriously. Here's a hint. If you get mad or angry, you're taking it too seriously.
I do that. I take myself pretty seriously. Seriously. It's funny. Seriously can get heavy if you let it. Seriously. But when we sprinkle levity with seriously, seriously becomes a way to illuminate that which we might ponder, question, inspire, pack up, and move with. Seriously.
Let me just move with that. I'm feeling the seriousness of people's projection of how the world should work. The times when I've gotten angry, I had a specific notion of how life should work. And if it wasn't working that way, well, doggone it, that was a serious problem.
Should and seriously go hand in hand, like they're siblings.
How do they go hand in hand?
Well, like that.
Oh. The siblings, serious
and should. When you start using shoulds, it should be like this and it should be like that. That's pretty serious. If you don't think it should be that way and the way it is the way you've got it, it's like a lot less serious.
Well, isn't there like a good should and like a bad should, like good cholesterol and bad cholesterol?
Maybe.
Well, let me say what I'm talking about here. The good should is things should be better. People should get along.
It's still not what is. It's a should. Therefore, if they don't get along, you'll be upset or you'll have a serious moment.
God forbid. Is that like a senior moment?
No, senior moments are opening the refrigerator and going, why am I here in front of this refrigerator? Huh. That's a senior moment.
I thought it was opening the front door and thinking it was the refrigerator.
Oh, well, that's a very senior moment. You graduated to a top senior moment.
And you're invited to come to that top senior space.
I mean, we call it CRS, which means can't remember.
Shit.
Right.
Rochelle, you're so funny because there's this hesitation in you, like, is it okay to say words like that on the radio show?
Well, yeah, but I would say the same thing in the office today when I was talking to somebody. I just didn't use the word.
You're a good girl.
I am a good girl, and that's serious. That's very serious.
You're very serious.
And is there a difference between being serious and taking oneself seriously?
Big difference. I'd like to call in the professor to
Which
see.
Which professor?
Professor Umbridge, of course.
Okay.
To tell us about the difference between being serious and taking yourself seriously. Oh, I'm delighted to be here this evening. This is Professor Umbridge. My wife takes herself quite seriously, and trying to unseriousize her is like trying to pry someone's food out of their mouth after they've swallowed it.
Yes, oh, Professor Umbridge, I've met your wife, and she does not do that at all.
You don't live with her, my dear.
Well, that's true.
You live with Harold, God forbid. But aside from that, when you take yourself seriously, you're like elevating your sense of self-importance. So am I. I'm important, and what I do is important, and what I think is vital to the whole mix of reality. What caused you to do that, of course, is the nagging belief that you're not important at all. And of course, this is the case. Perhaps you could take that a little more seriously, the notion that you're not important, and just drop into it. Then you see, oh, what a delight, how freeing, I'm not important. And you can laugh. Then you're not taking yourself seriously, and especially you're not taking your self-importance seriously.
Seriously?
That's what I'd have to say about it, Rochelle.
Seriously, that's ponderable.
Well, you know, I specialize in ponders, and I'd like to remind you out there that ponders are available. I have special ponders.
Here we go. Okay. Now you're not being serious.
Of course I am. I have seriously colored ponders. I have different size and shape ponders. I've even developed ethnic and religious diversity ponders. Depending upon what your ethnic or religious persuasion is, you might be persuaded to actually try on one of these ponders. I'll give you a great ponder that some of you may be asking. If your testament, whatever it is that you adhere to, says you should be loving, and somewhere in the same testament it says you should cut their heads off, the infidels, which of the two remarks should you take more seriously?
It's an interesting question because I definitely would not take it seriously. I think when somebody says they're going to cut somebody's head off and does, I take that person seriously. But when they say that they're going to love everybody and I don't see evidence of that, then I don't know if I would take them seriously.
Well, now you're talking about something that's quite difficult. Love everyone. I'm doing all I can if I can, first of all, love myself at any given moment when I'm constantly not living up to the serious requirements that I've established for myself.
All the shoulds.
Very indeed, the shoulds. The whole should family comes to my door.
Right.
The little baby shoulds and the grandparents.
And the woods and the coulds. They're all the Wood family.
They're the in-laws, the woods and the coulds. Although the coulds, I don't mind the coulds as much as I do the shoulds. The woods and the coulds are good in-laws. Shorts, on the other hand, are good outlaws. I try not to keep them together, keep them separate, so that we all stand apart and able to view ourselves, well, less seriously.
I went on a trip with you there, Professor Umbridge. That was a trip and a half.
Thank you, Professor. Wow. I'd say it was a trip in three quarters, give or take a quarter. But let's consider seriously from a musical point of view. This is a gal by the name of Ginger Lee, or Lee, excuse me. It is Ginger Lee.
Does she spell her name L-E-I-G-H?
She does. I just caught that. Ginger Lee. I love that. And here she is helping us to, well, not take it so seriously.
Oh, yeah. There's a dead man waiting at the crossroads. He's thrown black wings from his shoulder blades. He's waiting there for the devil, who is driving the train. And the devil stops and the dead man says, "Hey, what can I get for you today?" And the devil says, "Well, son, I think I'll have a quarter pound of weird cheese." You gotta stop taking it seriously, or from this fine earth you will leave nothing but a bloated body and a set of keys to your brand new Porsche. Yeah. There's a teacher at the front of a first grade class. She says, "Kids, what have you got for me today?" And little Jackie, he raises his hand. He says, "This is what I have to say." He said, "Well, God made monkey and monkey made man. So I grew this thumb so that I can hand you this fine little apple that fell from a tree. Have a nice day, Mrs. E." You gotta stop taking it seriously, all from this fine earth you will leave nothing but a bloated body and a set of keys to your brand new Porsche. You gotta stop taking it seriously, all from this fine earth you will leave nothing but a bloated body and a set of keys to your brand new Porsche. And yes, thank you, Ginger Lee. Lee, maybe it's Ginger Lee, but I like saying Ginger Lee.
She has to have a sense of humor.
Probably. Her original name was Constance Fitzboroughness. That's ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
You know, when I leave it to that spontaneous...
You think that the opposite of seriously is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's not?
No, it's not.
Oh, wait a minute. I forgot. It's silly.
I didn't think Professor Umbridge answered the question of the difference between being serious and taking oneself seriously.
Okay. How would you like to answer it?
There are things that are serious. Like, think about this killing in Orlando. That's a serious event. Pretty serious. And yet, there was this young man, I heard him on the radio today, and he said from this thing, he realized that if he hated the people who did this, then he'd become like them. And he really needed to just rev up his love and to realize that he loves the people in his community. He got to love himself more and to really have maybe pity on people who can't love. I thought that was from that horrendous thing, so arbitrary. To just shoot people.
Well, he had an enlightened perspective, I'd say. And it's our capacity to make that kind of choice in the face of disaster, in the face of the impulse to react, to get angry, that is a sign of some level of spiritual development, certainly a maturing of the personality.
Absolutely.
The serious part of living in the universe is the quiet peace and joy that suffuses me when I stop and get still and simply ask for it and then act as if it's happening. It's like hypnotherapy. Remember, we were talking about it the other night. Share how you learned how to be hypnotized.
I was able to be hypnotized because I realized that all hypnosis was self-hypnosis. And I was telling myself to do these things. And in telling myself to do these things, I acquiesced. I did it.
We want to recommend acquiescing.
Ponder and acquiesce all in the same evening.
You can ponder acquiescing. Some people might think of acquiescing as then you're a loser. See, there's a very fine line when you think you're a loser because you've acquiesced or surrendered. It's a very important aspect of the spiritual process, ability to surrender.
What are you surrendering? I think that's the big question all the time.
But what are you surrendering and what are you surrendering to?
And I think I surrender my little self to my bigger self.
Which is which? It's hard to tell with you, girl.
I don't mean physically. The little self who is constantly judging. To me, a little self is judging all the time. And when I surrender the judgments, what happens is the bigger self, the more enlightened self, the more aware self, is able to be there and pat the little self on the head and realize that at some point the little self will grow up.
Rochelle, this is Rabbi Greenberg. So introduce me to your little self. I'd like to meet the little darling. What's her name?
I don't know. Probably Shelley.
Shelley, can I ask you, how old are you, Shelley?
Oh, usually around 4 to 6.
4 to 6. So this is the important years for you, Shelley. So what happens between 4 and 6 that you're not liking, that you're taking very seriously?
Actually, it's more like 11 when I was in this self-judgment place.
There's a time when you start taking yourself seriously, when you have this self-judgment, which means that you're stuck short in there. And you shouldn't have stuck the short in there because that would make it like a time to start judging yourself against the short. The short is like, be this way, otherwise you're not going to get what you want.
Yes. And there was a sense of like, all of a sudden I was in a comparison mode around that age when puberty hits, comparing myself to what I should be like and how I should act. And there's no room in there to be anything because it's impossible. The standards are so unlike myself, like seeing myself as a high standard. I see myself as a little standard, and then there's everything else out there as a big standard. That's the standard that I can't live up to. So much bigger than I see myself.
How do certain things get to be the standard? They stood in line. I can see them now like little kids. I want to be the standard. The other one says, no, I'm the standard. The third one says, I am the standard for the way it is because I know how to weigh things correctly so that the people who feel obligated to fulfill their shoulds can come out and win, and they pay the most. That's what I do as the standard. That's why I should be standard number one.
It's so strange to be at this point in my life and look back at the time when I was undergoing this self-doubt so assiduously, so much energy. Like I was telling a friend the other day, I said, there's a lot less that bothers me than used to bother me. That doesn't mean nothing bothers me, but things do bother me. And the things that do bother me, I can let go of quicker. I think of the things that bothered me so much when I was 11, 12, 13 years old. Wow, that's another world. It's like another planet. It's so foreign.
I'm a beneficiary, by the way, personally, of it being less and less because there was like chunks of me that she used to judge. And then it got less, like this part here was still being judged, but these parts over here, figuratively speaking. And so what a relief for these parts. Because they felt like they were always under the scrutiny of the judge, along with the other parts that had previously
Seriously?
Been released. Seriously.
I don't think so. But I do judge you less because I judge me less. And my should barometer has definitely lowered.
Isn't that curious how they go together? I judge myself less. I judge others less.
It's easier. I have people that I work with. You know, you work with people 4, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. Sometimes you spend more time with than anybody else in your life.
I bet that's true for a lot of us, huh?
Oh, yeah. You get to know them, and sometimes you don't want to get to know them because you don't want to take them home with you or anything else. But we have a lot of fun, the women that I work with. We laugh a lot in our particular office. Even when we're taking ourselves seriously, at least one of us in that group sees that it's not so serious. and we just make a joke out of it or say something that breaks the tension, and then it comes back.
Well, I see how the seriousness arises. I'm thinking of people in the office, and something comes in that may happen that you can't control. And it's like you get hysterical.
You get hysterical.
Someone gets hysterical. Right. I always prefer it be me because I feel I can control my hysteria.
I'm deluded.
Wait a minute. It's
just hysterical. Comes out differently. Some people get emotionally wrecked when things are not going right, and they express it in a hysterical way. And some people get emotionally wrecked when things aren't going right, and they express it differently.
How otherwise? Like they get depressed. That's how I do it.
Or they get tight. They get really tight because they can't control it. And so they control their own body. Seriously, I find it fascinating to watch people, how their physical body reacts to things. They're reacting to something and their body's over here doing nothing. And some people come into union with their body when they have a reaction and their body is doing it with them.
So, I think of East Coast people like that. They feel more in union with their body when they get upset at you. What the fuck are you doing here?
And a lot of East Coast people have come from Mediterranean countries where you find that all the time. Italy, France. What do you call those? They're like love languages.
Romance languages.
Romance languages. Good. And so the romance language countries, they tend to be, well, hotter countries. People tend to be more expressive.
Well, let me ask Barney. He lives in New York. So you're amongst all these Mediterranean people. Oh, yeah. Hi, this is Barney. People in my neighborhood and people I hang with can be very explosive. It's like you're living around explosions. So part of your upbringing is they have to condition you for these explosions happening. One of the things my parents did was they said boo a lot, very explosively. But they were silly looking doing that. So I wanted to say to them, seriously, you want me to learn this? An explosive boo. See, they wanted me to get used to like all these temperamental people who just yell and say exactly what they feel when they feel it. Now, unlike certain other people, like on the other coast, for example, where people are more waspish-like, they don't let the feelings out so much because they shouldn't do that. Whereas in my neighborhood, it's not even a should or shouldn't. You're going to express the feelings in those ways.
I remember growing up in Brooklyn, people yelled when they wanted something. They didn't walk up to you and say something. If you were across the room, they yelled for you to be heard. It was never like you walk up to somebody and ask them a question. You yelled across the room, across the street. People would be yelling all the time. It was part of growing up.
Seriously?
Seriously. That's what people did in my neighborhood growing up. There was a lot of yelling.
Were they serious when they were yelling or were they not so serious?
They were pretty serious when they were yelling. Somebody was coming home late for dinner and you hear some yelling, Anthony, get in here right now. I'm going to come out there and kill you.
But that's because people have trouble learning to mellow out. But this is one way of mellowing out, but it may or may not be, well, it's something to consider, what can I tell you, in a serious way.
One, two, you know what to do. You take a little hit and then you take a toe. And then every day it seems you smoke, you smoke, smoke. I tell you, my friends, you got a problem with the dope. Cause you're smoking too much weed. Well, it ain't cocaine and it ain't crack. It ain't heroin and it sure ain't smack. But if you smoke it enough, it'll be a habit like that. If you're smoking too much weed.
Seriously.
From a dealer friend of mine, he's got me some really great Fort Collins smoke.
my depression and eases my pain and keeps me off prescriptions and settles my brain. But I'll eat a dozen donuts standing naked in the rain if I'm smoking too much weed. Well, boys, don't get heavy with me now, and don't get me wrong. You know, I really don't mind if you're hitting the bong. It's just tonight, you know, I can't come along, 'cause I've been smoking too much weed.
Seriously.
Well, now I had me some dreams. I had me hope. You know, but a friend of mine just turned me on to these edibles, and, you know, you don't even have to smoke them. It's kind of weird, but you know what? First you take a little hit, and then you take a toke, and then, friends, every day I seem to smoke, smoke, smoke. I promise you, friends, I've got a problem with dope, 'cause I've been smoking too much weed.
Seriously.
Seriously.
Seriously?
It's called Too Much Weed, a.k.a. Seriously, by Southern Comfort.
Uh-huh.
Well, those Southern boys, I guess they like to toke up too, huh? Senator Beauregard, is that you? Well, huh, we like our way of distracting ourselves and escaping from the reality that's in our face, just pretty much like anyone else who seeks some kind of alternative point of view or consciousness, or to switch their feelings around into a state that is normally called high, as opposed to, well, low, I guess, because people are depressed when they're low. Even though there's a part of me that wants to say, you should get out of that. I know that if I stick that should word in there, I'm just going to ball up the works. And since I want their boat, no sense balling up the works. Speaking of boat, we got these two people running for president here in the United States in 2016. Hillary and Donald. And I want to say, seriously? This is it? Seriously? Y'all not fooling me, are you? Now, this is a joke, isn't it? You're going to take them off stage, and then it's just be like that movie, Singing in the Rain. Remember that? The gal who sang there, she sounded awful. Debbie Reynolds, she was in the background singing, and they put the curtain aside, and there's the real good quality president, the one who has understanding and compassion, who's educated, has self-control, has wisdom, able to negotiate the differences in a very centered way, and is able to recognize the intent behind people's desires and points of view, carefully respond to that and not get caught up in all the hoopla.
But don't you think, Senator Beauregard, that our choices reflect who we are? I read a book once called The Dumbing of America. Our penchant for pleasure over learning and expanding consciousness does dumb us down. We've become not an enlightened society. So it reflects who we would choose to lead us, would be an unenlightened being.
This is where I think history can be really useful. We talk a lot about past, future. As a matter of fact, I was listening to one of our shows today while I was cleaning your 7. That particular show was called Go On. It goes particularly well when I'm cleaning Yurt 7. Not so much with Yurt 8. It would prefer I listen to a different show.
You are so funny about that. Paul takes his yurts very seriously.
I do.
He falls in love with his yurts, and he cleans them, and he's cleaning his babies.
Yeah. I feel like they're like my little girls. I have 9 yurts.
No little boys?
No, these are all girl yurts.
They have a feminine aspect to them?
You open up and you go in.
I guess a male would feel that way. Okay.
Yeah. I get to open up and go in every day. My yurt always feels better after I leave because she's feeling clean and sexy and neat. She loves it. Seriously.
I don't know that anybody in the history of where we live has ever felt that way about a yurt. But then I don't know, because I've never spoken to anybody but you like this.
It's just a fabulous opportunity. It reminds me of the line, carry wood and chop water. What? Or is it the other way around?
Carry water and chop wood.
I know, I'd like to see what would happen if you tried to chop the water.
Well, it'll splash.
Probably. But I did want to go back to something you were saying with regard to the fact that we have who we are. Mm-hmm. This is who we are. We want someone like Donald Trump and what he represents. On one hand, I applaud it for being, this is where we are, instead of trying to bullshit that we're somewhere else.
Right.
This is it. Then I look at, I don't want us to be there as the dominant point of view. Is it simply a matter of my vote? See, on the other side, you've got this kind of wishy-washiness that is the political system as we know it, oozing kind of thing that's messy and fed by toxic dollars and stuff, and it's so complex and so much going on, makes me want to ask these guys, seriously?
I don't know that much about international politics. Is there a possibility that there's a political system that exists right now on this planet that is wise and enlightened? From what I read in the newspapers, I don't see one. In terms of our own growth as human beings, we're just not ready to have enlightened leaders because we don't have very much maturity.
I don't think a political system inherently can be enlightened. Maybe I'm wrong there, but there is one system that functions like a political system. It's more of an economic system, and it's called Mondragon. It's the Mondragon community in Basque, Spain. Their whole economic paradigm, which is what, of course, is the thing that most informs and controls the political system, is the economic paradigm. Right, Professor Schnitzel? Is that the truth?
Hi, Professor Schnitzel.
Yeah, the paradigm, if you want to have it the most the way you want it, you get scared. And the economics is what takes over the very political system. I've heard of this Mondragon. It's very good because they built it on relationships and responsibility. And I think we have something here that's beginning in its own subtle way to be the way of the future. That's eBay. Well, you might say I'm prejudiced because I like using eBay a lot, and especially when it's exciting, when you're bidding on something and it gets down to the last second or two and you may get outbid. But eBay, you see, because each person in eBay is, I'm talking about the seller now, is evaluated and has a percentage of people who are happy with them. And so you have instant corroboration of quality.
Is that actual? Is it seriously true? Because what we know about the social network is a whole bunch of people can write in stuff that is not true.
Yeah, but this is serious on the not-so-serious way, because the people who are evaluating it are the actual customers. It's not just somebody. They have the ones who have bought something from this person. Or if this person had not acted with integrity, et cetera, et cetera, you'd let them know. And you are the one in best position to know. You are the customer. Seriously?
You lost me a bit.
I lost you. I lost myself about three sentences ago. Goodbye. Bye, back there, sir.
But this is two things. One, I remember the Mondragon system a long time ago, like 25, 30 years ago, when I first heard of it. Have we done any studies to know it's still functioning? Is it doing well? Has it actualized into a society that functions really well? Two, when we talk about a system of buying and selling, I don't know that we can escape that in any way. It's almost a respiratory thing. We give and we take, and how we choose to do that, we use money now. What does the Course in Miracles call them?
Pieces of paper and metal discs. But it isn't that anymore. It's actually a piece of plastic.
Though we still use metals and paper.
We do.
It's an exchange. I have something, you give me something for it. It's always an exchange.
Speaking of exchange, I would like to remind you that our show is sponsored by Go Raw. They have exchanged with the producers and with us so that we can be here sharing this. And we're very proud to have them as our sponsor. It's a two-way street. because they really are providing something quality, both nutritionally and deliciously.
And Universe Spirit, which is constantly informing the public as to what is going on in the world that's sometimes hidden from media and other things. So we really know what's happening with our planet in the universe and how we can be part of it. We know how we've been part of it to muck it up, part of it to clean it up.
That's the shift that's happening. We're recognizing that we need to take responsibility for the aftermath of our behavior and our decision-making.
Excessive behavior.
This is perhaps a time to be more serious.
White knuckles, sweaty palms. I can't get anything wrong. It's taking far too long. Why does it seem that way? You are too straight now. You should be fine by now. Your time is running out. Why do you think that way? You know me, I take everything so seriously.
Sometimes even letting go is more than I can do. Letting go can be a challenge when you're holding on tightly.
Which is an example of very seriously, holding on tightly.
But when you realize that there's nothing there that you think you're holding on to, you go, seriously?
Yeah. You wrote a poem once about falling into something.
It was a poem called To Trust.
Yes.
The character is struggling with trust, whether to trust life, God, man, women, and I go through all these considerations in the poem, and the last one is, I would, and there's this recurrent refrain during the poem, I would, if reasons why not surface, and then at the very end, the voice says, I would if I could. But how can I trust? How can I open up until I see you come out right side up on the other side of annihilation? Will you? Your hands are too large, God. I'm afraid I'll get lost in the wrinkles.
We take ourselves seriously. Sometimes I think we take ourselves seriously to avoid oblivion.
I always recommend avoiding oblivion. I mean, since I first heard about it. Okay, you know what I'm talking? Oblivion is, I thought it sucked. When I was like 8 years old, I first met Oblivion, and I did not like
it. What was the name of that song, and who was the singer? It's very hard to hear the lyrics.
Aaron O'Donnell.
Sounds like a Celtic lass.
Oh, sure, this could be Celtic there. And this is Father O'Malley.
What was the name of it?
What was the name of it, Errol? Seriously?
Seriously?
Seriously.
Lots of seriously songs tonight.
this is your subject now. And sometimes it's easy to get very serious when you look at things like devastation and mass suffering and people being unfairly treated, domestic violence, and all the other things in which we're doing to each other that are just so not very pleasant. And it's serious stuff there that's going on, especially if you're at the butt of the pain there. Whatever it is they're swinging at you, hit you there. The way to get to the less serious about all of that, first of all, you have to be willing to recognize that you don't be wanting to go in that direction anymore. You have to get your needs, kind of like those folks in the 12-step meeting. I heard once, you don't walk into a 12-step meeting, you crawl in. Your efforts to somehow save and satisfy your own life, it's become an abysmal failure. And you don't want to put that word abysmal in front of too many words, darling. Seriously.
I take it seriously. Abysmal is...
It is abysmal.
You don't fuck around with that word. I like seriously. I don't know why. It just makes me more intelligent somehow when I take things seriously. Then I can laugh at myself for taking things seriously, which is even more intelligent.
What is your experience of taking things seriously? What does that actually mean, look like?
Well,
would you like to know?
Taking something seriously has to do with examining it, really getting into it, mucking about in it. What I might arrive at might not be very serious at all, but while I'm in it, it feels like I'm taking it very seriously. I do these exercises every morning. I do upper body exercises, lift weights, so that I can lift
Ella. She leaves her lower body to me.
No. Then I do lower body exercises, more about balance and strength than lifting weights. I don't lift weights with my legs or anything. But when I'm doing it, and I caught myself in the mirror while I was doing it, and I had this really serious expression on my face. I was taking it very seriously, this weight thing, and counting it and doing all that stuff around it. I guess seriously equates to a certain deep...
Intense focus.
Intense focus. Thank you so much for giving me those two words. Intense focus.
I wish I could take credit for them, but I got them from the English language.
I seriously appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's intense focus. And I don't see anything wrong with that. There's nothing negative about it, as far as I'm concerned.
Did someone say there was?
No.
Seriously?
Seriously.
Okay.
I don't think that there's any negative connotation to seriously. I just think it can be quite fun in the sense that if you watch our little granddaughter, when she does things, she's intensely focused on something for 6 seconds maybe, and then she goes to something else and is intensely focused on it. But it's delightful because it has with it a sense of innocence.
I used to lead this exercise in some of our programs where we get the audience involved. We have a sketch that we do called, it was The Innocence. Yeah, it's about looking at human beings from a few steps removed, like angels or something. Or someone used to see the piece and call us Mom and Pop God. And then afterward, I asked the audience if they would be willing to say this sentence. I take myself very seriously. They all do say it. I deliberately picked that sentence as a way to engage the audience because one of the things I have learned is if you can help people recognize where they are and then be congruent with where they are, that's the stage from which you can only move. You can't really move in any significant way toward your growth unless you first meet yourself where you are.
It's really nice to meet yourself where you are. Otherwise, you miss yourself.
Long gone. And I was in the bathroom. So as these people say, I take myself very seriously because many of them do. They are having an experience of a moment of congruence. That's the point. That's the key. That's the place from which you can begin to move into genuine awareness.
Seriously?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Seriously. Let me think here.
Genuine awareness is the first step towards growth.
The first step is congruence.
Yeah, but you have to be aware that you're not first.
Of course. I'm talking about the first step, but we're past that. Once you are made aware, so that exercise, people are made aware. They don't know that necessarily, but during the course of the workshop, I help them recognize that. Then they're put back into choice, and that's what happens when you get to that point of congruence. With it comes a benny, a perk, and that you get choice back. As long as we're divided against ourselves, we've really abandoned choice because we are led around. We are enslaved, usually by fear.
I can't remember if it was Obama or somebody else who said that just recently, in terms of freedom, that we have choice. Been listening to National Public Radio a lot because I'm in the car a lot. I really enjoy my moments of listening to other people's opinions or observations, life as we know it.
So what did you see that or hear?
Well, I'm very aware that that's true, that freedom has to do with choice, that when we feel that we don't have a choice, we feel enslaved, we feel imprisoned, we feel stuck. But the minute we feel we can make a choice, which we in truth we can do every time in our lives, every moment in our lives, because in truth we are free. We may have the illusion that we're not, rather than the other way around. Freedom is not an illusion. Freedom is real. The illusion is that we're stuck, that we're imprisoned, that we can't make a choice.
What we're struggling with at this time in at least American and world history is finding that place. We got the freedom. We became the United States. Now what? In order to go to that next step, we have to get more conscious. Some people who are into integral philosophy would say we need to go to the next level of integral, which is able to integrate all the previous points of view and ways of looking at reality and have no resistance to any of them, but to recognize and include that they're part of how we are where we are now. Like an actor, you're willing to be any and all of those things.
And you have no resistance to it. And that's the most important thing of all. As far as I'm concerned, you cannot absorb another person's point of view if you are totally stuck in your own.
It requires a breaking.
Maybe that's what's happening on this planet with climate destabilization and terrorism and everything else that feels like it's cracking. There's cracks. Well, maybe it's just me. There's cracks in my sense of what's right. There's cracking. And I stand solid in my own piece of it. As it cracks up, I'm on a piece of it. I feel solid on that piece. At the same time, I can see cracks going on and chunks falling off.
So you sit quietly in the crack zone.
Yes.
If you listen very carefully, you can almost hear Rochelle sitting quietly, not making a sound.
I'd really like that.
And this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth. We're coming to you live from Lupin Lodge. Tonight's the first night we've done this video. We have no idea how it's going to come out, but here we are in
you
our
probably
kitchen.
Won't.
Our show is sponsored by Go Raw and Universe Spirit. The website is Job One for Humanity. And you need to kind of prepare yourself. It's a lot of serious, real problems. But we can do it. Part of that doing it is this business of getting congruent with ourselves. And sometimes it takes the squishing, you know, the pressures from an uncomfortable life to squish us down to where we're willing to break open and enter the crack zone.
It sounds like a bad inner city.
It's a group.
What do you call it? Inner city television show.
The Crack Zone.
The
it was
Crack
a rock
Zone.
Group. You know, they're the ones that had pompadour hairs and long gray beards.
Oh, God, no. What?
That wasn't the Crack Zone.
No, I don't think so.
You can get a hold of us by sending me an email, estrider@gmail.com. estrider@gmail.com. Our website is thelaughingheart.org. You can see us in our prime, actually, when we were out around the country performing. We were prime ribs, both of us.
I don't know that it was our prime. I definitely think we were younger. I haven't even hit my prime yet.
You know that? Seriously. That's great. Because we're going to have to sign off. And again, go raw. Job one for humanity. TheLaughingHeart.org. And we are?
Rochelle Strider.
And yours truly, Errol Strider. And what do we need to remember, Rochelle?
We need to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Seriously.